All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. In my sports career, we always got preached the importance of the little things, whether it's having your hand behind the line on a sprint, finishing out every drill, or making sure you have the right 6-inch step to start a drive block on the offensive line. It all mattered. How you do the little things is how you're going to do everything, because small actions have big benefits. This is just like how taking care of your gut health can support your whole body health. With our friends at Seed and Seed's DS01, their daily symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I'm getting my first shipment on the way here, and I am pumped to try it out. The thing that stands out to me, in addition to all the great health benefits, is the convenience. You don't have to refrigerate DS01, and so the free travel vial that I'm going to get with the welcome kit, I can take on the go with me. I can have DS01 with me wherever I need it during my busy schedule. Your guy's gut is the central hub for all these various pathways throughout your body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, your immune system, and more. And everything with DO1 is backed by science. Lots of science. It was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with the new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DS01 a product you know you can trust. And the best part with prebiotics and probiotics, they work best when they are consistently used like any other routine health habits. So Seed's subscription service is easily going to build DS01 into your routine with no refrigeration needed. So trust your gut with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, synchronized swimming, tailgates before a college football game, late night karaoke, especially late night karaoke. There is nothing better than a duet of summer lovin', I can assure you that. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo with Mike Golic Jr. That is me. With me, as always, on the ones and twos, super producer Brandon Newman, and of course, my father, Mike Golic Sr. Dad, Brandon, how we doing?
Doing wonderfully. I don't know if Brandon's doing so well after seeing his Lakers get swept, but I'm doing just fine because, you know, I just like to watch sports. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, that was my worry this morning.
I am doing fine. It's nice. Nothing's more powerful than a no in this wonderful life that we have. And I don't have to worry about the Lakers winning a championship this year. I do have to worry about LeBron James, and we'll get to that later on in this show. But to see LeBron go out the way he did, almost like Gladiator 300 level, I'm happy.
That is, well, that was my first thought, was it was a comeback with your shield or on it game. And LeBron did come back on it, which is not what we can say for some of his teammates. But Brandon also said it. We got a great show. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. Check us out on DraftKings YouTube, as well as Samsung TV Plus and the DraftKingsNetwork.com, where you can watch us live 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern every day. Plenty to get to with LeBron deciding to go and hit the panic switch for a lot of folks in the postgame press conference. A little bit of college football debate to get to, as a quarterback tier list has slandered our dear sweet boy Sam Hartman, and so we will defend his honor in public. And the NFL decided to change a whole bunch of rules. But Dad, last night, what I will say about the Lakers and Nuggets series, as the Nuggets complete the sweep, so we have never had two conference finals both end in a sweep. We've got the chance for that to come true, and I believe it will tonight when the Heat take on the Celtics in game 4 of that series. But man, two different worlds completely in how these went down for a Lakers team that at every turn during this series made it hard on Denver and ultimately lost out to the better team. And last night was the perfect example of that. The Lakers had a 15-point lead at halftime because LeBron James came out and had the highest scoring quarter in his postseason history in his career, the highest scoring half in his postseason history in his career, and it still ended up not being enough in the face of Nikola Jokic's now record 8th playoff triple-double in the same postseason, breaking a record that stood for 56 years, helped by Wilt freaking Chamberlain. That is the story of the entire series, is it's just someone's better was better than the Lakers' better, and we saw that show up in each and every game.
Completely agree, and we're going to give our love to Denver here because they deserve it, because after the game, LeBron did that thing that some great athletes do, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, what did he just say? Man, our shows are made now because of what he said. We'll get to that. Let's give Denver the love. First and foremost, Mike, 46 seasons before a finals appearance. That's the longest in NBA NBA history. 94 now after that win, playoff wins, was the most playoff wins without making it to the finals. So they have got rid of those evils out of their franchise. They have finally, and they're the better, whatever team makes it. Now, even though if Boston were to come back and win, I believe they would have home court over Denver. That's not going to happen. Denver is going to play Miami, and Denver's the better team. Just don't say that really loud in front of Jimmy Butler. We have time to get to all of that. Jokic, 8 triple-doubles in 15 postseason games. I mean, over half the games, he's had a triple-double. He's averaged a triple-double in this series and the Phoenix series. And as you mentioned, when you not only are in the same area of Wilt Chamberlain, but you break a Wilt Chamberlain record, of which Jokic has done, that is, you know, stand up, tip your cap, and clap. And Mike Malone, I don't know if we have it, had another one of those sound bites after the game, you know, about the Joker and how he's being treated and perceived and such. Is just amazing. But this series, and you're right, unlike the other series, this series had all close games except for one, and all big leads that evaporated. Go back to game 1, it was a 6-point game, then a 5-point game, then you did have an 11-point game, and then you had the 2-point game last night with LeBron on the final couple of shots to try and tie it, especially on that last one. One shot was ugly. The other shot, he was defensed incredibly well by Murray and by Aaron Gordon. But what they're doing and what Joker is doing as a team, they're just so good. Again, they were down in this one. You thought, okay, this was going to be a game that the Lakers got. They're up 73-58 at halftime, 15-point lead. LeBron is out of his mind. Then it took to the 4:39 mark of the third quarter, and that lead was gone. And when that lead was gone, even though it was close to the end, you just kind of had that feeling, okay, Denver caught him, Denver's going to pass him. It got to be a very exciting ending, but you just kind of had it like, okay, Denver's going to finish this thing off.
And it wasn't like they did it pretty, right? That Jokic shot that everyone's going to show late in the shot clock of him hitting the step back three. Those were Denver's last few possessions where they kind of clammed it up. The gears got a little jammed for them. And you ended up with Nikola Jokic as a stretch five with the ball in his hands with 4 seconds coming down in the shot clock, just having to chuck up dirt for a lot of these last few possessions. And so they made it ugly in the name of trying to grind out a bunch of clock. Jokic was in foul trouble. He sat with 5 fouls after two really dumb offensive fouls, especially for a player of his brilliance. And so they made it harder on themselves than they needed to down the stretch, but it was him constantly bailing them out. Like you mentioned that third quarter run, Aaron Gordon was kind of the one. He was the odd man out of the others on that team of the non-Jokic Jamal Murray guys that had a game with 22 points and was lighting it up from three. But this really was the culmination of all things about this team, and all roads led back to Jokic in this game.
Yeah,
I think
to really quickly to your point about the shots that Joker made, he scored 5 points in the last 250, and he hit a couple of buckets, even though that step back three was crazy. He did one other like that in one of the other games. But he made his shots. LeBron missed his shots. LeBron's fadeaway from the baseline was not a pretty shot. In his last two shots coming toward the end with about 26 seconds to go, nowhere near the bucket. And then they have the 4 seconds left down two, and they run a nice little curl thing for LeBron to get the ball at the top of the key, and then he drives. Give credit to Murray, who had his hand on the ball as LeBron was trying to bring it up, and then when LeBron tried to finish it, Aaron Gordon was there to just tip it a little bit. So that was a difference of two greats. Joker made his last couple shots. LeBron missed his last couple shots.
I do think ultimately this game is going to end up as a net positive for LeBron, right? The legacy talk's always overblown because at this point you're trying to course correct something that's been on such a stern path for a long time. But looking at this game, I did still feel a little bit nervous when we had that first half lead, right? Because the Lakers at that point, I think were like 7 of 11 in the first half from three, and then maybe hit one more three in the second half. There was a long stretch of that half where they did not hit a three-pointer at all in the second half. It felt unsustainable. They were nailing from three. LeBron James had his foot all the way down on the gas, which we saw in the second half wasn't sustainable for a guy his age. And so you get to halftime and the lead's only 15, and that had been really a 10-point lead for most of the second quarter. And you just felt this looming specter of Denver as the Terminator saying, all right, we'll eat a couple of these bullets, we'll walk through the hellfire, and then we're going to come out on the other side and choke the life out of you. And that's exactly what they did. But, Dad, does this still end up to you looking like a net positive for LeBron James, the player, and the way we think of him? Because I think especially him taking that last shot is going to matter to a lot of people in the way that it still shouldn't.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's been the one rip on LeBron through all the years of covering him, is take the last shot when he would just as easily dish that thing off, and because he drew the pressure and let somebody else take that shot. That's why he's that passer instead of shooter all the times. That's why another reason why people won't put him in the category, you know, with Michael Jordan as the greatest of all time, because there was none. Now, we did see a couple of times Jordan actually dished the ball off, but for the most part, he was taking
those
shots.
And for the most part, LeBron's had some of the best crunch time numbers in NBA history. So these are all largely misnomers, but it's barbershop talk.
Absolutely. 1,000% right. And I heard the talk before this game saying it would be better for LeBron's legacy if you lose now and don't lose another finals, of which he's lost more than a few, about when you lose, which is always amazing because as a player, you never think about that. I mean, even if, as LeBron said after the game, it's like, I consider the season a disappointment because our only goal is to win the championship. So you're not satisfied. You can't win the championship if you're not there. But they sit there and talk about legacy of losing yet another NBA Finals. To me, Mike, it's not so much if he were in the NBA, if this was the NBA Finals and they were swept, or it was a game 7 or whatever, and he put up 40 and was the oldest at 38 years old to put up 40 points in a postseason game. If he did this in the Finals, I think we'd still talk about him the same way. Yeah, he lost another Finals, but look at this old man go. You know, he's still getting the job done, and he did it in crunch time. He was getting it done, but it just gets harder and harder to do. And at the end of the game, when I hear people talking about, oh, when Jamal Murray had his hand on the ball back in the day, LeBron would have lifted him off the ground, you know, some superhuman feat, you know, I'm like, okay, let's ease up. I mean, these are other basketball players, pretty good basketball players as well. And there were two of them on LeBron, and they did a good job. You know, but to say 25-year-old LeBron maybe would have dealt with a different, maybe he would have. Maybe he would have, because he is 38. He's got a lot of wear and tear, and certainly by that point of the game, he's going to be more worn out. But that's life, man. That's sports. That's the way it works. So you got to deal with what you have right now. And he dealt with it pretty damn good through that game to get 40 points. Even if you want to say at the end, oh, man, he would have done that so differently 10 years ago. Well, hell, it ain't 10 years ago.
Well, I think we do kind of downgrade some of our criticism of LeBron. One, because he is 38 now, and we've seen over the stretch of this postseason, we've had to come to grips as a basketball-watching public with the fact that we have seen his best days. And that while there are still good days that can be sprinkled right in here, we've seen his best shot. And so I think we're grading on a bit of a curb. And also we've got Anthony Davis there to be the punching bag, who at every turn – the fact that we got Tristan Thompson minutes last night is going to be a direct indictment of Anthony Davis for so many people. When Tristan Thompson does deserve a weird amount of credit for doing that – and handling the halftime interview last night with Lisa Salters. But this all led to the road that we got to at the end of the game. LeBron at the podium for the weird stuff. Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends? The waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help.
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision. And just order for the table, a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice-cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister U.S., White Plains, New York.
All right, so now that we've properly celebrated the Denver Nuggets, let's all crack our knuckles and get into the stuff that we know we want to talk about here. Because LeBron James, I'd be very curious what your read on this is. So I'm sitting around last night watching the post-game press conferences, and LeBron James gets up there, and he does the usual song and dance, right, where it's a bit self-aggrandizing. He talked about, they asked him, you know, is there anything you learned about Jokic that you didn't already know this series? And he says, no, I knew he was a great player. A lot of people can't understand what he does from the neck up, but I do, so I appreciate that. Talking about what a smart player he is, talking about how good he is still relative to the rest of the league. And then at the very end of the presser, LeBron gets up there and he says the thing. He does and takes the nuclear option and says, when asked about upcoming season, there were a lot of questions he got peppered with about the roster next year. Will they compete next year?
Right.
And he said right before he walked off stage, quote, I've got a lot to think about, to be honest, just for me personally, going forward with the game of basketball. Now, this was followed up on by multiple outlets, including Chris Haynes of Bleacher Report, that says, according to sources, Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James is unsure if he'll be with the team when the 23-24 season starts in the fall, and retirement is under consideration. So, Dad, do you believe any of this from LeBron James right now, or is this the normal round of postseason attention seeking that we've become accustomed to seeing?
I don't know. I got a lot to think about, to be honest. And just for me personally, going forward with the game of basketball, got a lot to think about. Appreciate it.
Well, I'll say anytime you're 38 years old in a pro sport and you've been in that sport for 20 years, retirement is always an option. But I listen, you know what I'm about to say here, Mike. You've heard me say it time and time again, and I've said it over the couple of decades I've been doing shows, is don't believe anything a player says as soon as the season ends. I mean, there's way too much emotion involved. He played in all 17 postseason games, including the play-in against Minnesota. Hard fought. You know he's all about championships. And right after the game, and the thing about it is he was the one who brought it up right at the end. He kind of intimated what was going on there. So I do not put stock in anything a player says immediately following a season. You got to give that time, that season time to end. You got to give the body a time to heal a little bit. You got to give the mind a chance to kind of come down a little bit before you make any kind of that decision. But what is daunting, and I don't know how far his mind goes in all this, but, you know, and he's one of the greatest of all time, but this happens to athletes every single year. LeBron happens to make news whenever he says a word, which is fine, and we get to talk about it, but this happens to every athlete, is do I want to play another year, especially when I'm getting older? Because as I've said time and time again, and it is the truth, it's the preparation in the off season, knowing all that you have to do in the off season to be at the top of your game when the regular season rolls around. And I know 82 games can be tough, you know, in the regular season, but it's that preparation of what you have to do behind closed doors to get ready to play that next season is daunting. I don't care what sport you play. That's where the work is done. The cake is on game day. You know, the batter and the baking is done, you know, in the off season. And that's, I don't know if that entered LeBron's mind, but it enters every athlete's mind of, because people ask me about retirement in the NFL. I said, people retire because they don't want to go through the process in the off season. You know, you give yourself, I used to give myself about 3 weeks and then start training again, you know, right into the off season program, right into mini camps, right into training camp, right into the season. And you do that. And I did it for 9 years. He's on 20. So what you have to do to prepare for that is absolutely daunting. And you don't know if you want to put your body through that again. So I don't know if that all came up to him, because we know out there the whole Bronny thing, he wants to play with his son, of which he's backed off a little bit on by saying, you know, I want Bronny to do what he wants to do. If that doesn't involve me, so be it. But, you know, that kind of scenario. But no, I do not ever take a, while he could retire because he is older and his body is, you know, is an older body, I will rarely take an athlete at his word right after the season when he talks about retirement.
I appreciate you dealing with this earnestly, Dad, because I don't think that any of this is entering LeBron's mind right now. I think that man's a criminal mastermind at the podium, and I think he knows exactly what he's doing between being jealous that everyone talked about Carmelo Anthony so glowingly all day, and he made sure to let everyone know he knew that video had been shot a week ago. The typical LeBron James predicting the future meme that exists out there. There's that. There is the notion that this could be legitimate, and maybe he wants a year to rest up, watch Bronny at USC, and then come back in synchronization with him with a little bit of year of less wear and tear on his body. Or there's the third party in all this, which is the usual LeBron James line for a lot of people. Is this a leverage situation? Because there are a lot of players, as him and Anthony Davis both pointed out, that are on short-term deals that are coming up this offseason. Austin Reeves, we know, is one of them. But Kyrie Irving was also in the building. And I heard Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective guys talking about the possibility of them going there. And there's part of me that does wonder, Dad, is this LeBron James doing what he's done his entire career? Making sure franchises understand there needs to continue to be a sense of urgency. And that even though you remade our whole roster at the trade deadline, there's still always more that we can do. Do you think that Kyrie Irving panic button could be something they explore?
Mike, I don't think that would be a good move, because if they get Kyrie, you're listening to all the scenarios about what they can do with this team. Their depth is gone. Their depth is gone. And you're talking about then a 39-year-old in LeBron, AD, who gets nicked up every year, though he had a really good year when LeBron was out, and Kyrie kind of a, you know, could be a question mark at times, though, man, when he's on, he is on. But your depth is then gone. I think they said it would be in the area of $130 million dedicated to Kyrie, AD, and LeBron if they brought Kyrie in. So I don't, while you get another superstar and we talk about these super teams, I don't know if that's good for this team, you know, in lacking that. Look what happened to Phoenix when they brought in Kevin Durant. They basically got rid of all their depth and underachieved with what everybody thought they were going to do and cost Monty Williams his job. So, you know, pick your poison there. You want the two superstars and a little more depth. You got some pretty good play from guys off the bench. Or are you basically wiping that out by bringing in Kyrie?
Yeah, I do think Phoenix is an interesting cautionary tale, and you just lost to the team. That's the example on the other side of what happens if you give stuff longer than half a season to bake and formulate there. Right. But you have to ask yourself, and the reason I think they're at least going to kick the tires on and explore it is you got to decide what you need more, because LeBron James at his age is a different X factor. Do you need more of another superstar who's able to shoulder the load in critical moments when LeBron James runs out of gas? Or do you need the depth in the team around him and the belief that with another year, LeBron and AD can still be enough for you on the star front? That's the calculus you've got to decide. That's the Anthony Davis insertion into this conversation as well. Those are all of the big questions that the Lakers now walk into this offseason with, thanks to LeBron James at the podium. In my sports career, we always got preached the importance of the little things, whether it's having your hand behind the line on a sprint, finishing out every drill, or making sure you have the right 6-inch step to start a drive block on the offensive line. It all mattered. How you do the little things is how you're going to do everything, because small actions have big benefits. This is just like how taking care of your gut health can support your whole body health. With our friends at Seed and Seed's DSO1, their daily symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I'm getting my first shipment on the way here, and I am pumped to try it out. The thing that stands out to me, in addition to all the great health benefits, is the convenience. You don't have to refrigerate DSO1, and so the free travel vial that I'm going to get with the welcome kit, I can take on the go with me. I can have DSO1 with me wherever I need it during my busy schedule. Your guy's gut is the central hub for all these various pathways throughout your body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, your immune system, and more. And everything with DO1 is backed by science. Lots of science. It was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with the new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you know you can trust. And the best part with prebiotics and probiotics, they work best when they are consistently used like any other routine health habits. So Seed's subscription service is easily going to build DSO1 into your routine with no refrigeration needed. So trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO. All right, we got some NFL rule changes to get to. We got a little bit of college football realignment talk to get to, but we also probably should say thank you, Dad, as we talk about LeBron James at the podium last night. Really, the entire sports talk industrial complex owes LeBron a thank you card, because he just handed us instant content all summer long. LeBron James knows this. He's been around the content game for a long time. He does the shop, all this other stuff. Dad, I would venture to say it's more likely we get a LeBron James podcast that starts this summer than it is a LeBron James retirement announcement this summer. Where are you at on the likelihood of that, on the God's green earth scale of no way LeBron retires to it's a possibility because he's old as hell and look tired as hell?
There is, and I'll say this, here we go. There is no way on God's green earth LeBron James retires from the sport of basketball this offseason. Not going to happen. I still think he wants to play with his son, who has to play at least 1 year or be a year out of high school, and he'll be at USC. And I just think once his mind settles and his body heals up a little bit, he will be back for yet another year and another run at the championship.
I agree. And honestly, the podium, while it's meant to throw us off the scent and meant to make us believe he's actually mortal thinking about retirement, it actually just reminds us that LeBron is so addicted to the spotlight and so addicted to the attention that he's had basically since he was 14 years old that he couldn't even in that moment let the Nuggets have it, let his friend Carmelo have it, let anybody else have it. He grabbed that thing by the haunches and got it right in. So I think you're right on that. I think we're going to see him back on the basketball court next fall.
Yep. I do think he's going to be there, and I'm a little disappointed. He kind of pulled a Joe Montana, if you will. He took the spotlight away from Carmelo Anthony, who had retired, just as when I retired in 1994, whenever I retired, whatever the month was, Joe Montana retired the same day. You know, he stole my shine. You know, of the big press conference that I didn't have, the big announcement that I didn't make, but was all stolen away for the two or three people especially the people in my family that knew I was retiring, all of a sudden, they were like, wow, Joe Montana retired. Let's start looking at his career. Dad, we'll push you aside. So, yeah, I'm talking about, you know, you kids. Even though you were young, you were 4 and 5 years old, you guys were more interested in Joe Montana's retirement than your own father's.
I mean, it's a classic. I didn't realize that Tom Brady had stolen that move from Joe Montana. You are the J.J. Watt to Joe Montana's Tom Brady in this situation.
That's it. It's exactly right. It's exactly right. Again, I was a player nobody knew retired, but still, in my mind, he stole my thunder. And he's a fellow Domer. Wow.
I know. You figure there would have been some honor amongst brothers in that situation. I'm a little stunned. He right. played with Uncle Bob, so you guys had the family familiarity there. It's a damn shame is what it is. So, I thoughts and prayers to you. I'm glad to see you've still held on to that at this point. Dad, speaking of the NFL, we might as well get to some of the rule changes that we had go down yesterday. Yep. The spring owners' meeting is a little more tasteful and understated than its counterpart near the end of the fall. Went through, and all the rules that everyone talked about went through. We had the emergency quarterback rule reinstated after the 49ers had to trot Christian McCaffrey out in the NFC Championship game, and we've heard them complain about that all offseason long. So, teams can now carry a third quarterback on the roster without it counting against their game day roster total and all those things that we knew had been a rule in place before 2011, changed after that. They announced the NFL draft is going to head to Green Bay in 2025, so they're finally getting a little piece of the pie. But, Dad, we've had discussions, you and I, a lot on shows about Thursday night football around the NFL, and we got the latest chapter added to that is now Thursday night games can officially be flexed. We knew the rule had changed to allow teams to now play 2 Thursday night football games over the course of a given year, but now from weeks 13 to 17, the NFL can flex any game to Thursday night football with a 28-day notice, so about a month notice here. Is this a net positive for you? What should people feel about this change to Thursday night football?
Listen, I am not one of these and never have been. I know the players talk about player safety and playing on Thursdays. You know, again, when I played on two or three Thanksgiving games, no one was concerned about my safety, you know, playing on a Thursday. And now every team plays at least once. Now, you can only have a max of 2 games on Thursday right now. And we've seen teams play on 2 Thursdays, but sometimes it was Thursday to Thursday. So they still had a full week. So this wasn't about a short week. And then after a Thursday game, you get 10 days till the next one. So you're never going to get me to sit here and cry about, you know, oh my God, the safety of the game playing on Thursdays. Players can do it. You can play on Thursdays. The fans are the ones that really get nailed here, because it could be 28 days in advance. Fans who have tickets for Thursday night games, all of a sudden, you know, your team could be playing on a Sunday, you know, and you're SOL on the thing. But again, it's a business that's concerned mostly about the bottom line. The fans are going to be there. You know, anytime we've tried to say, oh, this is going to kill the NFL and their attendance, it doesn't. You know, the attendance stays high. The TV ratings stay high. That's just the way it is. And the NFL makes their $15 billion a year or whatever it makes, and everybody is rich, fat, and happy. The owners are billionaires and the players are millionaires. So that one doesn't really affect me, Mike, at all. The Thursday night games, players, you feel it for sure. Players will be just fine. They can handle it, and life goes on, and everybody continues to make their money.
Playing one is different than playing two in a regular season that also had a game added to it, and then a postseason that already had a game added to it, too. It's been a lot of extra strain on players' bodies added all at once in this situation.
If you're playing one Thursday game, that's just like we all played on Thanksgiving. We played one Thursday
on Thanksgiving. But now the good teams can play two, and with what you talked about on Thanksgiving, there's also the possibility that a team that plays on Thanksgiving could get one before or after and play 3 Thursday night games in a season.
So let me see who gets a couple of Thursday games, both on short rest. Because, as I said, we've seen it on Thursday to Thursday where they still got the full week. So we'll see how that plays out. If you start telling me there's going to be a couple of teams that have the short rest and Thursday games, I'll re-enter the discussion. But let me see how this plays out at first. Because as I said, after a Thursday game, you got 10 days till your next game. So, you know, I have not been one of those. And I know they're the old-time player, you know, what's going on? No. I've said this all along. I think players can play on Thursday. But as I'll repeat, you give me a couple of games on Thursday where you're getting short rest. Now we have something to talk about as far as how that team is getting rest compared to other teams.
Yeah, L for the players physically, but not financially. L for the in-person fans who now are dealt this fastball 28 days before a game they had tickets for. Win for the people that watch it on TV. And really, this is a message sent that what Jeff Bezos has invested in Thursday Night Football matters more to the NFL than all of that. They're going to give Thursday Night Football better games because they have got someone that's willing to meaningfully invest in those games that they want to respect and make happy. It's the Jeff Bezos Invitational on Thursday night, and everybody is invited at this point. So we will get better games, and that will be great for us as viewers, but there are a lot of other people that it was made clear you are not as important as what the money says, and that's the general theme of the NFL. All right. Let's get to the important stuff today because, Dad, you and I were sitting around yesterday having a conversation, and all of a sudden we got one of the offseason lists that popped up concerning quarterbacks in college football. Our good friend David Hale over at ESPN, writer and reporter, does a great job covering the ACC amongst many things, decided to put together a tier of all 133 FBS quarterback situations, broken down into tiers, and especially the top flight quarterbacks. And he decided to put our sweet baby angel, Sam Hartman, down in what amounts to tier four. So, David, how do you defend this egregious error against the Notre Dame Nation and against our sweet baby angel, Sam Hartman, to put him down there in the lowest ranks in rank four?
It's one of those things that I spent just a truly masochistic amount of time investing in thinking through where to put each of these quarterbacks. You know, I sat and slaved over where does New Mexico State's quarterback go in this grand scheme of things. And after hours of blood, sweat, and tears, this story pops up on ESPN.com, and I immediately regretted all of it. Every one of them was a bad decision, and you're right. I offended Sam Hartman. I offended all of those who have believed in Sam Hartman along the way. He dresses like a character from Godfather 1, and I should have taken that into consideration. He has admitted to saving one of his own ribs in his refrigerator, and I didn't take that into consideration. I spent way too much time thinking about his receiving core and not enough about what a badass Sam Hartman is, and I apologize to all of those domers out there.
Well, a couple things. First off, David, when Mike said our friend, he misspoke. He's your friend. You're not my friend at all. Secondly, what I gathered out of that is you took 5 minutes to put this list together and you hate Notre Dame. Tell me that's more the truth.
I default to I hate Notre Dame. Yes, that goes without saying. I write it out in Microsoft Word, and I've set up a macro where as soon as I use the words Notre Dame, it just bumps it down to the bottom of the list automatically. It's very efficient for my time anyway.
So, David, in all seriousness, and everyone, make sure you check out this list. It is an exhaustive amount of work. It is everybody. And the way it broke down, for anyone that hasn't seen it, you had in the top tier, the 1A, Caleb Williams and Drake May, the Heisman winner and one of the NFL draft darlings for next year. In the second tier down, Jordan Travis, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and Cam Rising. And then we start to get into the tiers with some of the other quarterbacks people have gotten to know. KJ Jefferson, Jalen Daniels, JJ McCarthy at Michigan. And we talk about Sam Hartman, but for you, was there a quarterback that you did have the most difficult time trying to place when you thought about their ranking going into next year?
Well, Hartman is a good example of a guy that it kind of shows what the larger issue is when you have so many transfers. So last year, and you know, Mike, I cover a lot of ACC, so I know Sam Hartman well, but last year the ACC was sort of where the Pac-12 is this year, and that, like, you're the quarterback. Everybody's stoked about the quarterbacks. You look at a guy like Tyler Van Dyke, Brennan Armstrong, Devin Leary, all these guys who were supposed to be really good last year, they get a new head coach or a new offensive coordinator, the scheme changes, and off a cliff. And so I don't think that's what's going to happen to Sam Hartman, but I think when you take a guy who has had so much success, particularly when you look at Wake Forest, that is a unique offensive system. So a guy who has had a ton of success in that, and then you put him in a different system, how will he adapt? How will he make that transition? I think Hartman is super smart. He's a really accurate deep ball thrower. I think he brings a lot of tools. I actually was sitting and talking with Dave Clawson at Wake Forest just yesterday and was asking him about this. And he was saying, look, some of the stuff that we did really well that Sam succeeded in, he probably will miss some of that, but he'll be able to do a lot more play action. that I think he's going to be really, really good in. And he thinks he's going to be great at Notre Dame. He said, my only regret about all of this is that we're going to have to face him at some point next season. But this is, I think, true. The more you engage in the portal, which I don't think is a bad thing necessarily, particularly for quarterbacks, but every time you go to a new place and start in a new system and have to get used to new receivers, there is a risk of significant fall off. And if we were having the same conversation last year and I told you that Phil Dracovic and Tyler Van Dyke and Brennan Armstrong were going to be three of the most disappointing quarterbacks in college football, a lot of people would have argued with me, and it's just about system changes.
David, couldn't part of that be, we talk about the system at Wake Forest and his success there, that he was a major reason for that system to be successful, and that part, of it could carry over to Notre Dame?
I think you're 100% right. I mean, it undersells Sam Hartman to suggest he's a system quarterback. He's not. And I think, frankly, he probably – I asked him at summer preseason ACC kickoff last year. I was like, what would make you come back, for a sixth year? And we talked through that. And I was like, well, what was the NFL draft evaluation? Did they bang you for being in that system? And he said, no, they banged me for being 5'11 or 5'6", I can't change that. So his skill set is actually a genuine, I think, NFL level skill set. It's just that he doesn't have the prototypical frame for what he does. I think you can look at it either way and make the case either way. There was a system that is benefited him because he was a really good fit for that system. How will he fit in another system? I think good. But he also, this is probably one of the really undervalued parts of this conversation. Wake Forest has churned out some legit wide receivers and have had some guys that have been really, really good. Notre Dame, since Claypool left, and you can include Michael Mayer in this conversation, a little bit different role, but they have not had that type of receiver production. And again, maybe you can blame that on the quarterbacks. So all of these things fit together in a larger mosaic. It just, to me, it does kind of show they're I don't want to say that I'm going to write them up. I wouldn't. And again, you said, as you pointed out, Mike, that he's still only in tier four behind, seven or eight other quarterbacks. I would have him in my top 10, 12 quarterbacks. I just think there's a little bit of risk there.
One of the tiers that you did have in these rankings here, as we will accept that as a formal apology for the slights against our dear sweet Sam Hartman, and we'll put that in a box and move it away. You did talk about the systems, and I thought the interesting note at the start of the article was that this is the first time in the playoff era since 2014 when we started this where Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, the programs that have been the face of this era in the sport, are all replacing a quarterback. Which of these QB rooms intrigues you the most going into this season?
I mean, intriguing certainly is Clemson because we have a taste of Cade Klubnik, but I don't think we've seen any level of consistency from him. And frankly, look, whatever paint job Dabo wants to put on this, they wanted him to win that job throughout most of last season, and he couldn't put together a full week of practices good enough to warrant being the starter until the ACC championship game. How does that change with Garrett Riley? To me, Clemson, Klubnik, Riley, that trifecta is so fascinating this year because, Clemson misses the playoff 1 year, blip. Misses the second year, it came down to the South Carolina game. Weird things happen. You miss for a third year with a second quarterback who was highly recruited. Suddenly the narrative isn't, Clemson's still knocking on the door. It is, have we seen the end of Clemson? And that fascinates me. But the one that is I don't know if you would say a red flag, but if you just had to go out, if you're Alabama and you just had to go out to get Notre Dame's backup quarterback because you don't have an answer to your starting quarterback question, I don't think Tyler Butler's a bad QB. I think he could probably play a lot of places. But when you're Alabama, that's a different conversation to be had. And it's not like Tommy Reese is not familiar with Tyler Butler. But to me, it's been a long time since we've looked at Alabama and said, I don't know if they – we've said, I don't know what the answer is at Alabama yet, but they've got one. This is the first time in a long time we've said, I don't know if they have an answer at quarterback right now.
David, real quick, one more from me. In Tier 5, you have Quinn Ewers from Texas. Does this say anything that Arch Manning came in as a true and wasn't able to beat out in your mind what is the fifth-tier quarterback?
Yeah, It's so hard to know exactly what to think of Ewers because look, we've had him in college for 2 years now. The first year was a wash. He didn't play at Ohio State. I've talked to a few folks around Ohio State who weren't exactly impressed by him, but he's a true freshman. These things happen. Last year, I mean, you look at the Alabama game, he played great, and then he gets hurt midway through that game. And he came back and had a couple of other good games. Down the stretch, he was a non-entity. But you also have Bijan Robinson, who, like, you'd be a moron not to just feed him the ball and let him run. Texas played well that way. The more that is put on your shoulders this year, I think, is a big question. He was a terrible deep ball thrower last year, statistically. Are you able to take advantage of the weapons that you have on the outside? That's a big question. Arch Manning, look, you've heard plenty of the is he overrated because of his last name conversations, too. I think that Texas is probably the I mentioned the Clemson and quarterback situation. Texas and yours is one of those other situations where it's like, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's now or never, but the spotlight is on them. The stars are sort of aligned to, you've got to do it now. And we can't talk about the potential of the program or the quarterback. It's got to happen on the field. And aside from some little blips here and there last year, we didn't see it on the field from him.
No, it's going to be, as the Texas's back meter continues to wind and make noises, this is going to be a very do-or-die year, it feels like, for Sark and Company down in Austin. David, we appreciate the time. Everyone check out the list. All 133 FBS quarterback situations ranked, organized into tiers, and sure to make you feel some things and yell at David on Twitter. We appreciate it, buddy.
No, I'm just happy that you guys didn't ask me when the ACC is blowing up. That was all my last week's conversation. So I'm glad we have moved on to some actual, real factual work, which is ranking lists of quarterbacks. So that's great.
That's perfect. Yeah, we'll have you back on tomorrow to talk about the ACC blowing up, all right? So just start to commit to that one. Same time, same place tomorrow, David. We appreciate it. Yeah, we didn't end up getting to that with him, Dad, but the ACC also does seem like it's always on the verge of blowing up. So an ever-present threat, but I'm glad we at least got to back him off a little bit of Sam Hartman.
That was nice to have him on to talk about this since that's his first and last appearance on your show. So he'll never be on again. Nope, nope, nope. I'm kidding.
At a David Hale joint on Twitter. Make sure you check him out here. And watch him rank quarterbacks. Stu got somewhere beaming with pride.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
All right, for everyone that's new to the change here now, we're doing the show live on DraftKings Network every day, 10 to 11 Eastern, live on Samsung TV Plus. Check it all out there. For the podcast audience, it means we have breaks now. We got little breathers in between, and I find out weird stuff about my teammates during this break. So it's me, my dad, Isaiah, who's our producer out in Vegas at VSiN, helping us out with all the images that you see, and Brandon, who you guys know and love. And Brandon and I had to sit here and discuss during this last break as I looked online and saw Oreos had put out a new edition called S'moreos, which is exactly what it sounds like. Graham cracker looking cookies on the outside with chocolate and marshmallow looking on the inside. And both my dad and Isaiah immediately rushed to the take of, not only do I not like s'mores, but completely out on marshmallows as well. I'm learning a lot about you people, and it's not great stuff right now. I'm going to be honest, Dad.
I am not a marshmallow guy. I put up with the marshmallow in a s'mores because I like graham crackers and chocolate. I have had graham crackers and chocolate and left out the marshmallow. So I don't know if you can technically call that a s'mores or just a chocolate graham cracker sandwich.
No.
I don't care. But I'm not a big marshmallow guy. Isaiah is not either. I respect that. Where Isaiah and I differ is he does not like the marshmallows in Lucky Charms. And that to me is a little different texture than the marshmallows that you put in the s'mores. I love marshmallows in Lucky Charms so much so I protect them against my daughter-in-law, Jenny, who is a tyrant. Because she digs into the cereal and pulls out just the marshmallows and just leaves the other cereal there. And she does that unknowingly. So next time you reach for Lucky Charms, you're just pouring out you know, the lucky or the charm, whichever you want to cut out.
I think the marshmallows are technically the charms. I think that's the situation here, Brandon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's in-house terrorism. Yep. I don't know what you guys should do about that. Like, that's terrifying. I don't know where to go with that. That person needs to be removed from the house when cereal is around.
The problem is she's the mother of my grandson, so I can't really take that. I just have to deal with it. You know, just maybe hide the
Lucky Charms
a little better. Yeah.
Yeah, see, we do have to work hard to make sure that Jackson, our nephew, your grandson, does not inherit those traits, because Brandon said it, and I'm glad he said it. Got to call it what it is. That's domestic terrorism. And if we don't label it, then we allow them to win, and we can't let Jenny win on that front right now. So I won't stand for the anti-marshmallow propaganda. It's Peep Nation out here representing strong and making sure to defend the honor of s'mores, where I think a little bit of marshmallow goes a long way. That being said, a little bit of the show goes a long way. Let's land the plane the way we always do. This, that, and the third. Three quick stories to finish off the day and send you on your way. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review, leave us that 5-star rating. Tell us what you want to hear. And, Dad, let's start with this. It finally became official. Las Vegas Raiders owner Mark Davis acknowledged on Monday that they have come to an agreement with Tom Brady, the retired NFL quarterback, to acquire ownership stake in the organization. No word on if he's admitted that the Tuck rule was actually FUBAR or not, but Dad, just another great piece of the Tom Brady portfolio being added now.
Yeah, remember, he's part owner of the Aces, the WNBA team in Las Vegas. He seems to have an affinity for Las Vegas on buying things there. We're seeing more and more of the top-level, top money-making guys or high-profile guys getting into ownership more than coaching or GMing. And that's why I'll be interested when LeBron does hang it up in a couple of years. What, you know, these guys, a lot of these guys seem to dig going into the soccer world, you know, as well. I'm going to give everybody a chance to win money today when you go to work in this trivia question. Mike, we'll get this one. Tom Brady is now the third former NFL player to have ownership of a team. He is the third. I'm sure there are people out there going, who the hell are the other two? One was a disgraced owner who basically got booted from the league, sold the team and made a boatload of cash for it. And that's Jerry Richardson of the Carolina Panthers. The other, George Halas. George Halas and Jerry Richardson are the only guys who played in the NFL and then had ownership of a team.
Oh, yeah, and then they bought the team back when bread cost a nickel, so it's a little different now for Tom Brady, who's got to buy a piece of a multi-billion dollar hide. Like, it feels disingenuous to compare them.
It's all relative of the money back then.
I want to know how much those guys paid for their initial ownership stake in the team and where that compares. How much that money got you back then versus how much what Tom Brady has had to pay will get you now in this league. That's the math I need you to math for me today, Dan.
Wow, you are a negative Nelly on that one. These are former players who had ownership in the team. You know, I don't care. I don't care if they paid a nickel for it. They got in.
All right, well, let's go to other former players, Dad, and get to that.
Yeah.
And get to some player hating. Ben Roethlisberger went on his podcast the other day, which I believe is footballin', spelled like you'd pronounce it in Pittsburgh with like an A-H in there, and said that in a moment of honesty, last year when he was watching the Steelers, he did not want to see Kenny Pickett succeed, taking over and being the first Steelers quarterback in his stead. Did any of that surprise you, Dad? Is this surprising hearing a former player admit the quiet part out loud?
He just spoke it out loud. There's plenty of players, whether while you're playing, that you, the guy you're going against, you want him, you know, that's trying to get your position, you want them to do bad. Or in this case, you leave as a legend and the next person in, you don't want to be successful. I guarantee you there are more players that think this than don't. I said this about golf all the time, the golf etiquette. Oh, one player doesn't wish another player to miss a putt. Bull! They absolutely do. They're sitting over there stoic and quiet. But if that guy misses the putt, they win the tournament. You don't think in their mind they're saying, noon, miss it. They're absolutely doing that. I would be doing that out loud, let alone trying to do it quiet. So, yes, players think these kind of things.
But it's different when you are playing and you're out and your replacement's in, and that could potentially be the end of your job. Ben's retired.
He's a made man in Pittsburgh. This is the pettiest thing I've heard in quite a while. And I don't begrudge someone. Lord knows we were a part of one of the pettiest shows on earth doing Go Look and Wingo and transferred that power to here now. But this seems unnecessarily petty given the fact that Kenny Pickett's not hurting anything that Ben Roethlisberger has built in Pittsburgh.
I'm not saying it's not petty. I'm just saying it's more prevalent in people's minds than we think. He just spoke it out loud. It's absolutely petty. And he basically admits that, saying, I'm going to get blasted for this. But what I'm saying is there are athletes in different forms of different sports, of different situations, where they're absolutely hoping that a certain person fails. Yes, it's petty, but it happens.
It's usually when they're your backup, though. That's what surprises me here. If Kenny Pickett really wants to twist the knife, he'll show up on the first team plane ride this season with a bag of P.F. Chang's in his hand and really let Big Ben know that there's a new sheriff in town. Dad, let's get to the third. This is quickly becoming a situation in the world of Major League Baseball where we now have two bird murders, or birders, as Chris Cody would refer to them, in the world of Major League Baseball in recent weeks. We had rookie Cleveland Guardian outfielder Will Brennan hit a hard grounder that accidentally killed a wandering bird in their 3-0 win over the White Sox this past week. This comes just last week after Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Zach Gallen unintentionally killed a bird warming up in the outfield before their game against the Oakland A's in apparently homage to Randy Johnson from back in the day smoking that bird. Dad, this is a terrifying time to be a bird around Major League Baseball. You have to wonder if this is pitch clock related.
Well, listen, the birds need to know. Just like I talked about armadillos when I was driving through Missouri from Arizona to South Bend, is there's a lot of dead armadillos on the road. Man, you got to learn. You got to see your brethren that are there laying on the side of the road. What does that tell you? Don't try and cross the road. You're seeing birds laying on the field there, unfortunately, and it is a shame. But if I'm another bird circling around saying, I sure as hell ain't going down there, you know, there's that little white ball that gets knocked around there that's knocking my guys out. So they got to learn hard lessons there, unfortunately. That Randy Johnson one really set it off on an actual pitch in a game going over the plate where the bird basically just exploded. That was horrific.
Now, the article on ESPN.com says this is the second time in a week a major league player has unintentionally killed a bird. Two's a trend. If we get a third, I got my eyes on you MLB players and your anti-bird agenda. Yeah. We're going to have a conversation about whether we move the un from unintentional and the way that you're approaching this. No birds were harmed in the making of this podcast. If you enjoyed it, download, subscribe, rate, review. Check us out on YouTube, DraftKingsNetwork.com, SangSome TV Plus, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Boom. Money in the bank.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
In my sports career, we always got preached the importance of the little things, whether it's having your hand behind the line on a sprint, finishing out every drill, or making sure you have the right 6-inch step to start a drive block on the offensive line. It all mattered. How you do the little things is how you're going to do everything, because small actions have big benefits. This is just like how taking care of your gut health can support your whole body health. With our friends at Seed and Seed's DSO1, their daily symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I'm getting my first shipment on the way here, and I am pumped to try it out. The thing that stands out to me, in addition to all the great health benefits, is the convenience. You don't have to refrigerate DSO1, and so the free travel vial that I'm going to get with the welcome kit, I can take on the go with me. I can have DSO1 with me wherever I need it during my busy schedule. Your guy's gut is the central hub for all these various pathways throughout your body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, your immune system, and more. And everything with DO1 is backed by science. lots of science. It was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with the new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you know you can trust. And the best part with prebiotics and probiotics, they work best when they are consistently used like any other routine health habits. So Seed's subscription service is easily going to build DSO1 into your routine with no refrigeration needed. So trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.